Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Acting Sheriff Kelly Martinez has approved a request from the Citizens Law Enforcement Review Board to have access to death scenes in county jails and fatal shootings involving officers, and we'll have details on today's show. There were some wild winds in Alpine this past week, and we'll have a report on damages suffered by some Alpine residents. Santee's City Council has moved forward with plans for a hotel to boost city revenues on the site formerly promised for a new library. In La Mesa, the City Council snuffed out plans for a cannabis dispensary near a residential neighborhood. Hear why some residents in East Alpine are raising concerns over proposed community and general plan changes that they fear will increase wildfire risk. Starting February 15th, vaccinated San Diego County residents will no longer have to wear a mask at most indoor venues, and we'll have details later on today, as well as what health experts advise. A restaurant owner and a former food truck operator have teamed up in Santee to operate two different restaurants in the same venue, not by dividing the space, but instead by staggering their schedules. La Mesa's City Council has approved a proposal from Councilmember Laura Lothian to create public art murals on buildings. From California News Service, find out why 3G cell phones will soon be obsolete. Morris Casuto, founding director of the Anti-Defamation League in San Diego, has died of leukemia. Hear about his remarkable life and legacy of defending Jewish people and all victims of hate crimes, even in the face of threats to his own life, on our show later today. SDG&E is warning customers to beware of scammers posing as SDG&E representatives. Learn how to spot these scams on our show. A Lakeside man is under arrest for the murder of his brother. For a Valentine's Day gift to show some love for our planet. Sheriff's deputies now have microchip scanners to help reunite lost pets and their owners faster. Then we'll have some national news from Public News Service, including an update on the Ukrainian peace talks, Vice President Harris traveling to Germany, and arrests made of truckers protesting mask mandates up in Canada. Later, we'll have tips for parents to protect your children online in honor of Safe Internet Day. Then, we'll re-air one of our Best of East County favorites on our Wildest Jobs segment, an interview with the Lakeside Rodeo clown who risks his life to help keep fallen riders safe. Learn about a new bill to help low-income college students, and finally, with the weather heating up, we'll have some barbecue safety tips for you today. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Less than 2 weeks after the retirement of Sheriff Bill Gore, Acting Sheriff Kelly Martinez has approved a process for trained Citizens Law Enforcement Review Board staff to respond to death scenes in county jails, as well as deputy-involved shootings that result in a fatality or where death is likely. The move comes after an October 18th recommendation by the oversight group to the San Diego County Sheriff's Department to allow such access. After a thorough review and in consideration of maintaining the integrity of criminal investigations that may arise from such incidents, Acting Sheriff Martinez concluded that fostering public trust means the Sheriff's Department must have investigations that are clearly understood, using a credible process and independent investigators. She says it is crucial that we have transparency in our work. CLERB Executive Officer Paul Parker believes the oversight group's presence at a death scene initially will increase the public's trust in the investigatory process. He says CLERB will now conduct truly independent death investigations, which will result in more accurate findings and, if applicable, more relevant policy and procedure recommendations. Under the new process, the Sheriff's Department will contact the CLERB to respond with sheriff's investigators at the time of the incident. This will allow the oversight group to get the information sooner and have better oversight, independence, and transparency, the Sheriff's Department indicates. The CLERB and the Sheriff's Department signed a Memorandum of Understanding on February 14th, solidifying the new policy, which took effect immediately. A press release from the Sheriff's Department states, "We appreciate the mission of the CLERB and look forward to continuing to support our mutual goal of instilling trust between the Sheriff's Department and the communities we serve." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
High winds howled through Alpine last week, causing damage to homes over several days. Lori Lee, who lives atop a hill on Viejas View Place, says her weather station recorded one gust at 84 miles an hour. Another resident described the powerful gusts as hurricane-force winds. In the Loving Life Alpine group on Facebook, residents posted descriptions and photos of the damage. Brandon Hamilton says he came home on Thursday, February 10th, to find his propane-powered barbecue submerged in his swimming pool. The photo he posted as proof prompted quips from neighbors about a barbecue pool party and a need for snorkels. But for others, the destruction was no laughing matter. Elizabeth Livingston posted a photo of her carport, which was destroyed by winds on Sunday, February 6th. Sheila Pinto posted that trampolines blew through windows. John Ball said that he had items that weighed over 100 pounds that were moved 10 feet by the winds. Jennifer Rye said a large dumpster got blown 100 feet down a hill by the winds that also split trees and filled her pool with dirt and leaves. Others described patio furniture and umbrellas hurtling down driveways or toppling over, as well as shopping carts blowing across the parking lot at Albertson's supermarket. Two poles were replaced by SDG&E after a large tree fell on power lines. But it could have been worse. As one resident noted, at least it didn't cause a fire. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Santee's grand plan to turn part of Trolley Square into an arts and entertainment district took a big step forward on February 9th when the City Council approved the sale of a parcel for a four-story, 89-room hotel. The site was once planned as a new library, but the council nixed that plan 2 years ago and decided the site was better suited for a hotel aimed at regional tourists. The Santee City Council voted unanimously to sell the parcel for $1.4 million to Excel Acquisitions, LLC. Excel promises to bring in either Hilton or Marriott to run the hotel, with an aim to get the deal completed by December 1st. Mayor John Minto told East County Magazine that the city needs more rooms to handle the increasing number of visitors to Santee, particularly families cheering on sons or daughters competing in multi-day tournaments at the Sportsplex complex adjacent to Town Center Community Park. He says, many of these people are staying outside the city because they can't find rooms at our current hotels. The city has been talking with Excel for years, but was thwarted in getting the project going due to litigation. The city and the shopping center owner settled their legal dispute earlier this month, leading to the official agreement with Excel at the February 9th City Council meeting. A hotel would generate much higher tax revenue than a library, but many Santee citizens who've heard the council talk about building a new library facility for decades feel as though the long-promised library is a very low priority for their elected officials. Cheryl Cosart, Santee Friends of the Library's president, says, I certainly understand where our city leaders are looking to improve our tax base to pay for our city's needs, but we hope we can continue working with them to get a new library built for this community. The current library is in an aging strip mall off Carlton Hills Boulevard that has insufficient parking and plumbing problems. The tiny space, one of the smallest in San Diego County, means readers usually must order books through the county's online website and pick them up later. When the City Council abandoned plans for a library site at Trolley Square 2 years ago, it never designated an alternate site. A tentative plan to combine a library with a community center was also abandoned last year. Minto says the city has been talking to a number of landowners about finding the right site for a new library, but hasn't been successful. He adds, "We'd like it to be someplace in the arts and entertainment area." Mayor Minto acknowledged that the city has been promising residents a library for a long time, but insists it hasn't been for a lack of trying. Two other key developments for the arts district that the city hoped would be open by now are either dead or appear unlikely to happen. A theater restaurant called Studio Movie Grill went bankrupt last year, killing that project. Carl Strauss Brewery, approved by the city in 2015 as the new headquarters for the successful San Diego Brewery, along with a tasting room and restaurant behind Trolley Square, has also not made any headways towards construction. The project did encounter some opposition early on from Preserve Wild Santee, a local environmental group, but those differences were settled in 2019. Then the pandemic hit. Mayor Minto says if nothing happens by the end of this year, Carl Strauss will lose its entitlement, leaving Santee beer fans with nothing to cheer about. But not all of Santee's plans have taken a hit. Another hotel, Woodspring Suites, a division of Choice Hotels, was approved by the council 2 years ago. It's still in the works, slated for construction at the intersection of State Routes 52 and 125. Reporting for East County Magazine in Santee, this is Marie Johnson.
Urban Leaf's hopes of opening a cannabis dispensary on Hillside Drive in La Mesa turned out to be only a pipe dream. The owner, Phil Rath, had received approval from the city's planning commission and from the design review board. But Dana Stevens, Executive Director of Community Action Service Advocacy, or CASA, filed an appeal asking the City Council to overturn the Planning Commission's approval. After hearing testimony on February 8th, the City Council voted 3-2 in favor of the appeal, extinguishing the dispensary's plans. Since voters approved adult-use recreational marijuana businesses in 2016, La Mesa has approved 17 cannabis dispensaries, or one for every 3,400 residents. Opponents voiced concern over La Mesa becoming a drug destination, as well as concerns over parking on the narrow street. The site is on the border between areas zoned commercial and residential. Urban Leaf wanted to convert a single-family home into a business with a storefront on the residential side. Some residents feared approval could set a precedent, allowing similar encroachments all over the city. The decision came down to a technicality over how the line of travel was drawn between the Urban Leaf site and another dispensary nearby. Phil Rath and city planners had drawn a meandering line between the two points that cleared the 1,000-foot minimum distance required. But Stevens argued that this drawing avoided recognizing a well-traveled pedestrian pathway that connects the two land plots, making the distance between them just over 200 feet. Not everyone opposed the project. One resident said she's lived near dispensaries that were good neighbors. She also chided opponents for negatively stereotyping cannabis users. Vice Mayor Jack Hsu made a motion to support the appeal and deny approval of the project, agreeing that the site was too close to another dispensary. Mayor Mark Arapostathis and Councilwoman Laura Lothian voted with Hsu to snuff out plans for a dispensary at the site. Councilman Bill Baber disagreed, suggesting it was unfair to the applicant to, quote, change the game at the end. Councilman Colin Parent voted with Baber, voicing concerns over potential litigation the city could face for denying the project. The expansion of cannabis businesses is playing out differently across the nation, often facing contention in communities. In La Mesa, the decision on this project came down to where the line should be drawn, literally. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
The deadline for public comments has been extended to March 5th for the Alpine Community Plan update and a proposed general plan amendment. The proposed changes would allow increased density on formerly protected lands near Cleveland National Forest lands. The county faces a housing shortage, but the proposed increases in density in Alpine are sparking controversy, mainly over fire safety concerns. Alpine has previously suffered major losses of homes from wildfires, including the 2003 Cedar Fire, the 2007 firestorms, and the 2020 Valley Fire. The Eastern Alpine Association is urging community members to let the county know that, quote, our lives are at risk unless new building in Eastern Alpine is either non-existent or minimal. Objections include concerns over evacuating people from remote developments if a wildland fire starts on federal forest lands, as well as the increased risk of wildfires that more homes in the area could bring. Opponents want setbacks between future development and wildfire-prone areas. A draft supplemental environmental impact report has been prepared on environmental impacts of the project. It states that almost all of the land in question is designated as a very high fire hazard severity zone. The EIR warns that the proposed project would substantially impair the implementation of an emergency response or evacuation plan, and further finds that impacts would be significant and unavoidable, adding fuel to the fire behind opponents' concerns. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
The COVID-19 pandemic forced Oscar Gonzalez and his son, Oscar Gonzalez Jr., to close down their food truck in National City. Fortunately, the family found an innovative solution to continue serving up Mexican food for the public, and they're now in East County. Oscar Gonzalez previously worked for Pete Gaforos, co-owner of the Omelet Factory in Santee, for over 20 years. So when Gaforos heard about the food truck closing, he offered to let Gonzalez share space at his Omelet Factory restaurant on Magnolia Avenue, meaning two restaurants in one location. Gonzalez Jr. says, "We jumped at the opportunity." But the two companies didn't split the space. Instead, they staggered schedules. Starting in January, after the Omelet Factory's customary breakfast and lunch service, the Gonzalez family has begun operating their new restaurant from 4 to 9 p.m., Mondays through Saturdays. It's called Al Pastor Town, and it serves up fresh Mex cuisine, such as tacos, tortas, and burritos, including the Flamin' Hot Burrito and the Iron Man Burrito, named for an athlete who used to patronize the Gonzalez food truck. There are also vegetarian options. The owners of Al Pastor Town take pride in living up to their new business's motto, traditional Mexican food crafted with love and passion. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health report. Starting February 15th, fully vaccinated people will no longer have to wear masks indoors in most places in San Diego County as the COVID-19 Omicron outbreak wanes. Well-fitted masks will still be required indoors for people who are not fully vaccinated. A person is considered fully vaccinated 2 weeks after getting two doses of the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines or one shot of the Johnson & Johnson immunization. Everybody, regardless of vaccination status, must still wear a mask on public transit, in schools and daycares, healthcare settings, detention centers, senior facilities, homeless and emergency shelters, and cool zones. The county change follows the California Department of Health lifting the mask mandate statewide, although counties are free to have stricter rules, and some still do, such as San Francisco and Los Angeles. But the action runs counter to advice provided by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, which continues to recommend face masks, especially N95 or KN95 masks, as the best way to prevent spread of the Omicron COVID-19 variant. While the changes come as relief to many pandemic-weary residents, they also raise some problems. First, relying on the honor system without checking vaccination status means there's no way to be sure that an unmasked person behind you in that grocery store line is vaccinated. Second, vaccine effectiveness drops sharply over time, yet there's no requirement for individuals to have the booster shot before taking off masks around others. While students must stay masked for now, due in part to low vaccination rates among young people, the County Board of Supervisors voted on February 8th to ask the state to phase out masking in schools in a safe and responsible manner. In East County, some parents and board members have also been calling for the mask mandate to be lifted, and at least one school board member, Jill Barto at Cajon Valley, has been defying the mask mandate during school board meetings. The pandemic is not over, although it has improved. The county reports 119 new deaths between January 2nd and February 4th. The case rate is triple among unvaccinated people versus fully vaccinated and boosted individuals, and it's somewhere in between for those that are vaccinated but not yet boosted. Over the last 2 weeks, over 13% of tests locally have been positive, although the actual rate may be higher since county figures do not include results of at-home tests that are now widely in use. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, urges people to get fully vaccinated and get booster shots. She says people who are not fully vaccinated are more likely to become infected compared to people who have received all the recommended doses of the COVID-19 vaccine, including the booster. And she adds, the vaccines are the best protection there is to prevent people from getting seriously ill, ending up in the hospital, or worse, dying. The region has plenty of COVID-19 vaccines and booster doses now, with over 400 vaccination sites. You can make an appointment or find a site near you by calling 833-422-4255 or by visiting the coronavirus-sd.com website. Again, that's coronavirus-sd.com, and the phone is 833-422-4255.
Most devices that run on 3G wireless technology will become obsolete this year, some in as soon as 3 weeks. In order to clear bandwidth for the new high-speed fifth-generation networks known as 5G, companies will shut off service to devices that use 3G. That includes older model flip phones, fire alarms, burglar alarms, personal emergency response necklaces or bracelets, and onboard navigation systems in older cars. Tom Camber is with Older Adults Technology Services from AARP.
What we're recommending is that a person really sit down and go through everything in their home and their car that might be connected to a wireless connection. Write down what the model number is and call the provider who's giving you service for the device.
AT&T will shut down its 3G network on February 22nd. T-Mobile shuts down its old Sprint network March 31st and its own 3G offerings at the end of July. And Verizon says it will retire its 3G service at the end of this year. Camber says you may have to replace your device, but you don't have to go with an expensive top-of-the-line 5G product if you only need a basic model.
Begin by saying, what is the most compatible new device that would be at the same level of cost of my old device? And can I do this cost-free? And many companies are trying to offer it for free right now.
The website, seniorplanet.org from AARP, hosts a free online workshop this Thursday, February 3rd, to help people navigate the transition from 3G to 5G. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region. Please support KNSJ by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Arts and Music Spotlight.
Ever drive through La Mesa and notice a blank side of a building? Councilmember Laura Lothian does, and she'd like to change what people see. At the February 8th City Council meeting, Councilmember Lothian proposed a La Mesa public murals endeavor to be a focus of the newly formed Arts and Culture Commission. She said she drew inspiration from interactive murals in Nashville, as well as the nearby nonprofit Ramona Heart Murals Project. The pitch was unanimously approved by the City Council during the virtual meeting, with support from Mayor Mark Aropostathis to send the idea to city staff for further study. Lothian earlier posted a video on social media showing a blank wall and a mural of a vintage car photoshopped onto it, a nod to the city's classic car show events. Her idea drew many positive comments from residents. The Arts and Culture Commission will report back to the City Council on how to best source buildings and choose artists for La Mesa artworks, as well as how to raise funds to support the effort. Ramona HEART Mural Project estimates that each square foot of mural costs $35 to create. La Mesa City Council's discussion included the idea that people could underwrite smaller artworks as a way to engage the community. In a pandemic year when much of the news has been troubling, Councilmember Lothian says, "This is a happy topic," adding, "There's so much history that we could make murals of." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
Morris Casuto, the Anti-Defamation League regional director who defended San Diego County's Jewish community against anti-Semitism while forging good relations with other ethnic and religious groups, died of leukemia on February 11th at the UCSD Jacobs Medical Center, San Diego Jewish World reports. He was 79 years old. Casuto spent 37 years as an ADL staff member, the last 32 of them as the civil rights group's voice in San Diego County until his retirement in 2010. As tributes pour in, Casuto is remembered for his bravery in the face of threats made against him and his family, and for being the go-to spokesman for the Jewish community whenever hate crimes against Jews or any other group occurred. Casuto's son, Lauren, paid tribute to his father on Facebook, stating, "I learned so much about bravery, fighting for one's convictions, and the importance of family and community from him." Rabbi Wayne Dosick of the Elijah Minyan called Casuto a giant advocate for social justice, human decency, and all things Jewish. His passionate voice loved and protected our San Diego Jewish community, the Jewish people everywhere, and our precious state of Israel. and he was a real mensch with a sweet soul and a great sense of humor. Rabbi Lisa Goldstein, former director of Hillel in San Diego, recalled him as tireless, passionate, and fierce. Rabbi Moshe Leiter, Chabad of University City, called Kasuto a real mensch, adding, "At a time when society is so polarized, Morris was there for everyone and was everyone's friend." He also praised Kasuto for using humor to diffuse tense situations. Kasuto was born in the Bronx, New York, in 1942 to a Sephardic family that traced its roots to Turkey. Before arriving in San Diego County, Kasuto had worked for the ADL in Washington, D.C., Columbus, Ohio, and Indianapolis. Upon arrival in San Diego, he met and became friends with San Diego Police Chief Bill Collender, the first Jew to become San Diego's top policeman. Collender recommended Kasuto for appointment to the Integration Task Force, which Collender chaired in response to a court order calling for an end to de facto segregation of the San Diego Unified School District. Kasuto once commented, "That began the whole process of the ADL reaching out to non-Jewish communities and organizations." Kasuto regularly taught law enforcement officers about the effect of hate crimes on victims and their communities. He lectured at the San Diego Police Academy and the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, among other venues. Kasuto was regularly a target of haters. He was often threatened. His home telephone number and address were published by extremist websites, so he had to install added security at his home and his offices and began wearing a bulletproof vest. His home was defaced with swastikas and threatening objects were delivered to him, including a talking skull and a balloon with an image of the Grim Reaper. With his wife and sons living at home, Kasuto's family felt vulnerable, but never asked him to change jobs, he once said. Courageously, despite the threats, he never shied away from denouncing injustice or speaking to media on behalf of the Jewish people. Among the racists who targeted Kasuto was Tom Metzger, a former Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan and the founder of the White Aryan Resistance, as well as Alec Curtis, who was imprisoned for vandalism targeting a synagogue, the Heartland Human Relations Agency, and the offices of then-Congressman Bob Filner, who is Jewish. Responding to Metzger's growing influence, Kasuto initiated ADL projects including San Diego County's Hate Crime Registry and the seminars he conducted with law enforcement agencies. Kasuto also helped to inaugurate the World of Difference program in schools, acquainting students with America's diverse population. Soon after his retirement, Kasuto received numerous awards from appreciative organizations. The National Conflict Resolution Center conferred its Lifetime Achievement Peacemaker Award on him. At the 2011 annual All People's Breakfast, celebrating the life of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., he received the San Diego Human Relations Commission's Ashley L. Walker Social Justice Award. After his retirement, he continued serving the community on the advisory board of the Joan B. Kroc School of Peace Studies at the University of San Diego. He also served as board member of the National Veterans Transition Services Incorporated, known as the Reboot Program, and of the Monarch School, serving the children of homeless families. He is survived by his wife, the former Doreen Roberta Sherwood Safir, his sons Lauren and Simon, their wives, and a granddaughter, Chloe. Tammy Gillies, regional director at the Anti-Defamation League San Diego, said ADL is saddened to learn of the passing of Morris Kasuto, the organization's founding regional director. Morris was an integral part of ADL and was highly regarded by all of his colleagues, she says, adding that he was also a leader in safety and security for the Jewish community and was a force to be reckoned with. She praised him as a warrior for the Jewish people and providing a voice for anyone who was a target of hate. The new ADL San Diego leader concludes, "We are grateful for the foundation that Morris laid and proud to continue his work." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
Now it's time for East County Magazine's Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers report, shining a light on shady deals all around us.
SDG&E is warning of a new round of scammers targeting utility customers. The robocalls tell customers that their power will be turned off within the hour. Here's what one of those calls sounds like.
"To inform you that your account is scheduled for an automatic disconnection in the next 30 to 45 minutes. If you wish to avoid disruption of services, please dial number 1 on your touch phone to speak with a live representative at our billings and collection department. Again, to speak with a live agent, please press the number 1 on your touch phone. Goodbye."
This scam is troubling because the calls sound professionally produced and claim to connect customers to the billing and collections department. If the scammers do not reach a person on their first call, they often call back or leave a message with the same instructions. Here are some tips to avoid getting ripped off. If a caller claims to work for SDG&E and asks for payment over the phone, it is a scam. Scammers often demand immediate payment. However, SDG&E will never contact customers to tell them that they must pay now or risk immediate disconnection. The company works with customers on payment plans if they are struggling to pay past due balances and offers a variety of assistance programs. Scammers often demand payment with cryptocurrency such as Bitcoin, prepaid cards such as Green Dot Money Pack, or via third-party payment apps such as Venmo or Zelle. SDG&E does not use these payment methods. SDG&E customers may receive communications directing them to pay their bill via their My Account at myaccount.sdge.com, use the Bill Matrix system, or to call and use the automated pay-by-phone option at 1-800-411-7343. Only provide financial information by telephone if you made the call. Hang up and call SDG&E directly at 1-800-411-7343. Again, that number is 1-800-411-7343. If you want to verify information about your account, you can also view your account status, including bills and payments, through their mobile app or via myaccount.sdge.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Tidwell with a Crime Beat report. A Lakeside man has been arrested for the murder of his brother. Sheriff's deputies responded to a report of a shooting the afternoon of February 11th at the brother's home on Moreno Avenue in Lakeside. Upon arrival, they found bystanders attempting to save the life of a 32-year-old Derek Edwards, who had been shot. Deputies and fire department medics also tried to save the victim's life, but he died shortly after being transported to a local hospital. His brother, 27-year-old Brian Edwards, suffered a stab wound in the altercation. Brian Edwards was also taken to a hospital, where he was arrested, says Lieutenant Thomas Seaver with the Sheriff's Homicide Unit. He will remain in the hospital under guard until he is medically cleared to be booked into jail.
This Valentine's Day, climate advocates want policymakers to show the planet some love. More than 450 local lawmakers from the group Elected Officials to Protect America have signed an open letter calling on President Joe Biden and congressional leaders to declare a climate emergency and pass the climate sections of the Build Back Better Act. Claire Brown, an economics professor at UC Berkeley, says time is running out.
The UN climate scientists made it very clear that for us to have a chance to keep the planet from overheating and making life uninhabitable for people, we have to reduce our carbon pollution 50% by 2030. So we only have 8 years.
The Build Back Better Act stalled in the U.S. Senate in December, and it's unclear when or if it will be revived. The bill would invest heavily in renewable energy and electric vehicles and would create a new civilian climate corps. Phoenix City Councilwoman Yasemin Ansari says the Build Back Better Act would be the largest investment in climate action in U.S. history.
The Build Back Better Act includes more than $550 billion for climate action, and it'll put the United States on a path to dramatically cut the pollution driving climate change while building a just and equitable economy with union jobs.
Christian Brock, CEO of Elected Officials to Protect America, says he'd like to see the California Geologic Energy Management Division follow through on its plan to require buffer zones between oil wells and neighborhoods.
We're asking for Governor Newsom to end fossil fuel production, to do 3,200-foot setbacks for communities near oil and gas well production.
The effects of climate change are apparent in the Golden State, where intense heat waves and extended drought are the new normal. And last year alone, wildfires blackened more than 2.5 million acres of land in California. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
1 in every 3 pets will get lost sometime in their lifetime. Fortunately, the San Diego County Sheriff's Department has a new way to help lost pets get home safely. Deputies can now scan lost pets for microchips, thanks to a generous donation from County Animal Services. 20 pet microchip readers have been distributed to sheriff's stations and substations. The idea arose after a German Shepherd named Lucy got frightened by fireworks and ran away from home. The Ramona Sheriff substation posted her information on social media, but deputies had to wait until the morning for county animal control officers to scan Lucy for a microchip. Director Kelly Campbell saw the heartwarming story and collaborated with Undersheriff Kelly Martinez to arrange donation of the microchip scanners and help reunite owners with their pets as quickly as possible. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Elijah McKee.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
So far, we've only seen escalation from Moscow. This is a pivotal moment. We're prepared for whatever should happen.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken was in Fiji over the weekend, but he described as troubling new Russian deployments near the border of Ukraine. President Joe Biden and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky spoke by phone for an hour Sunday. And Vice President Kamala Harris heads to Germany this week for a security conference. The Munich visit marks her 5th foreign trip as vice president. Before her trip, Harris stopped in New Jersey Friday. She spoke about Newark's efforts to replace its lead water pipes.
It is a public health issue. It is an equity issue. It is an issue of education. It is an issue of whether we are willing to invest in our future in terms of investing in our communities.
Some civil rights leaders are pushing for faster administration action to replace lead pipes that hurt Black and Latino communities. A Canadian judge has granted police more authority to remove vaccine mandate protesters blocking the Ambassador Bridge to Detroit. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau on the 5-day blockade by truckers at the border.
The blockades are hurting small businesses and neighborhoods. At the border, they're impacting trade, supply chains, and manufacturing. The people these blockades are hurting are everyday families.
According to the New York Times, Rudy Giuliani is in active discussions with the House committee investigating the January 6th insurrection. The former New York mayor and lawyer for former President Donald Trump is under subpoena to testify about how closely Trump coordinated with the mob that attempted to overturn the election. A jury of 9 is expected to resume deliberations today in former Republican vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin's libel case against the Times. Palin sued the newspaper over an editorial linking her to a deadly 2011 shooting in Tucson that killed 6 and wounded then-member of Congress Gabby Giffords. Syracuse University law professor Roy Gutterman.
And Governor Palin is arguing that her reputation has been damaged by this false mistake that was published and corrected. The Times went really quickly and within 14 hours published a correction to set the record straight.
James Bennett, then the editorial page editor at The Times, has denied the newspaper intentionally tried to defame Palin. The Times corrected the article and says the error didn't harm Palin's reputation. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
It's already been 1 week since Safer Internet Day, and in case you missed it, the National Parent Teachers Association is helping families have the talk with their kids to lay out ground rules for being online. Parents can still go to the website saferinternetday.us for guidance on how to facilitate a safe experience when kids use social media or gaming sites. Carrie Neal, the NPTA's PTA Connected Ambassador, says their Smart Talk tool encourages parents to give kids a say when setting family rules for technology and mobile devices.
The Smart Talk tool brings that power to families to collaboratively discuss what are we comfortable with, what are the parameters, and gives parents some language to work off of, and it gives kids a voice in the conversation.
The tool encourages parents to explain, for example, who should be considered a stranger online and to make sure kids know not to give out personal information like their address, school, or birth date online. The site also preps local PTA groups to raise awareness in their communities. Christine Soto, a parent and teacher in Ocampo, California, says families need to maintain a dialogue on this topic.
There's a lot of in-app purchases or places that they ask for information. Most parents, honestly, probably don't even know who their child's friends are online. It's just so easy to talk to just random people, and the kids think it's harmless. They're just playing a game.
The PTA.org/SaferInternet site also has links to programs like Create with Kindness that encourages responsible online behavior and explains how to enable parental controls on TikTok. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Rodeo season is just around the corner, and now we're going to replay one of our Best of East County episodes, our interview with Lakeside's rodeo clown.
This is Mark Clements.
And this is Cody Clements.
Working hard to bring you the wildest jobs in East County. Today, Cody and I went to Lakeside. There we met a man who's going to explain why his workday is more interesting than yours, or at least more likely to end up in a trip to the hospital. I'm here today with Kevin Higley, who is a rodeo clown. Kevin, how long have you been doing rodeo clowning?
Ooh, that's a dated question, huh? You're going to make me tell how old I am is what you're trying to get at, right? No, I've been actually a professional rodeo clown for 30 years. Prior to that, I participated in high school rodeo and as a contestant, and then I started doing what we call amateur rodeos as a rodeo clown bullfighter, and then I got my pro card and went on to the professional ranks, and so I've been it for, I bet you, total almost 35 years.
So you were doing professional rodeo as what, prior to doing the clown part of it?
I was, I tried to be a bull rider, thought maybe I could make a profession out of it and a living. Wasn't very good at that. So what it came to be was my brother was a really good bull rider, and we had what they call a practice pen at home where we buck some bulls and stuff, and so we took turns being the bullfighter who would save the bull rider. Well, boy, I saved him a whole lot more than he ever thought of saving me. And so it became apparent that I was probably a little bit more adapted to the bullfighting area and saving the cowboys. And that was really the love and passion that I had once I got started, that, you know, the thrill of saving a guy so you can get on to another one is really something else. And as time went on, of course, you slow down a couple steps. Not me, but my mind may. I don't know. But anyway, so then I transferred into the rodeo clown / barrel man type aspect of the professional rodeo deal.
Now, you use the term bull fighting, which seems more appropriate to me somehow. So here's another question for you. I've noticed that bulls don't seem to have a lot of sense of humor. So have you actually made one ever laugh?
Oh, yeah, they're always smiling when they run over you. Yeah, well, they've got a smile. You know, a lot of people, they used to say that a bull will actually close his eyes before he runs over you. But that's not true. I can attest to that. They're wide open, and they are laughing. It's like, I got you, buddy. It's good.
So the natural follow-up to that is, how many bones have you had broken?
That's one we don't like to discuss very much. But, you know, I've been really fortunate in my career to stay away from most of the broken bones. I fractured a couple neck vertebrae, and I've had a couple of bones in my foot broke and a couple things like that. But as a whole, I've been really healthy and really good.
Do you really like to use the word whole when you're talking about bulls and horns and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's kind of, you got to watch that, that one. Puts you in a hole.
Now, I'm sure that people, not necessarily associated with rodeo, but people on the outside probably think that you would do this for the thrills. What kind of satisfaction do you get from actually doing this work?
That's a great question. You know, like I said, early on is just the satisfaction that you've did something to help somebody else to be able to further their career and go on and stuff. So saving a bull rider from a bull or helping him, assisting him to be a higher score, that's where it starts. And that now it's the thrill of entertainment, you know, making people laugh. I just love to hear them giggle and laugh. And so that part is where I'm at now in my career. So we do it for the love, because, you know, unlike a lot of professional sports, the money isn't probably as good as your football, your baseball, your basketball players, but it also is an aspect of it. We do it for the money as well.
Yeah, so you're as a professional rodeo, I see that you have a big trailer, so you travel around from rodeo to rodeo?
I do. Throughout the course of this year, I'll probably be in at least 15 states. I guess the farthest away, which my trailer wasn't able to go with me and a lot of my animals wasn't, was Hawaii. We've actually did rodeos in Hawaii on two of the islands over there.
Oh, really? So you did go to Hawaii, but you just didn't float your trailer across?
No, trailer stayed home as well as my animals that I use in my clown acts, yeah.
Okay, so you do an act out on the in the arena with your own animals. I see you have a dog over there. Is that one of your...
Yeah, I've actually got three or four dogs, and I've got a trick horse, trick mule. You know, sometimes the kids become my tricks. You know, I'm very enthusiastic about getting the crowd involved, and so we use the kids a lot of times in some of the things we do.
If I ever were to find myself in a field with a pissed-off bull, because, you know, that happens to me a lot, give me some ideas for how to sort of distract the guy.
Well, you know, so the best thing to do is, of course, it's not all about how fast you can outrun them. It's about the move that you can make to get around them. Because they've got a big old body, and they got to bend in half to get to back to where you are. So what you want to do is you want to kind of get in as close as possible and then make that move to the inside and keep them coming. And then when you get to break, you break them so they're on a different lead and you can get away from them.
So you have to fight every instinct, natural instinct, to turn around and run. You have to get close to them, right next to them, in order to be safe.
You're sure better off. Yeah, you're better off. I mean, I know that my legs have never stood around for my face to take a beating, you know. And so it's kind of a natural instinct to run, yes. But, you know, there's a lot of different things you use. The apparel that we wear, the things we wear that gets their attention, that will bring them in your direction, and then it's up to you to make the move to bring him away from the cowboy and to get yourself away.
Okay. Now, professional football players, you mentioned them. They're always complaining about having a short career. Now, you've been doing this for a while. How long would you say the average rodeo clown sort of stays in the profession?
You know, and I guess that would be a term that's kind of tough to use, average, because I don't know any of us that are too, you know. And I guess the guy that kind of I look up to and kind of was my mentor, taught me a little bit, was a guy by the name of Wick Path. And he actually fought bulls at an active level, professional level, till he was 57 years old. It's all about how physically fit you stay. We've got a guy in the business right now that's strictly entertainment. He doesn't even get in the barrel anymore or do any of those things to help out. And he's 78 years old and very active and doing a great job.
Okay, well, see, my son here is, let's say that he goes to see his guidance counselor at school, and the guidance counselor, I've noticed, is, doesn't have any posters on the wall of rodeos or anything.
No.
But let's say that she says that she's changed her mind and he should forget about engineering and all of that, and he should become a rodeo clown. What advice would you give him for getting into this job, apart from why don't you do something safe like join the Navy SEALs?
Yeah, there we go. Two safe jobs. Well, I'll tell you what the first thing I would do with modern-day rodeo, we have schools, And the best thing to do for someone that's inspiring to be a rodeo clown or a bullfighter or a participant, a contestant, is to search out one of those schools and go spend a week, 3 days, whatever the school is, and actually get a head start on what they really could do and if they're adapted for that.
Do you know of any women who do this job who are rodeo clowns?
You know, there used to be, years ago, there was a lady that actually didn't actually do the bullfighting part of the clown, but she got in the barrel and she would tell a few jokes and do stuff. But that was a long time ago. Right at this present time, I don't know anybody, any ladies. I think it has to do with intelligence.
Oh, okay. That's an excellent point. Cody, you have a question?
Yeah, what's the deal with the barrels? What exactly do you do with barrels?
Okay, the barrel is out there for a particular reason. We had put it out in the middle of the arena. Actually, not quite the middle of the arena. It's a little closer to the bucking chutes. And it really becomes kind of like a safe haven for the bullfighters or the bull riders. In case that bull is coming at them, they're caught out in no man's land. They can come there, catch their breath, get away, or at least the bull will be distracted so they can move on. It's my job as a barrel man to position my barrel in a place which will help assist the bullfighters and the bull rider to be able to have a little bit more safety. So, and it's really like sitting in a washing machine just waiting for somebody to turn that thing on, the spin cycle. Because when one of those guys hits it, it can really turn your world upside down.
So it sounds like your job is more about strategy than it is about, I mean, obviously on YouTube or on TV, what they like to show is rodeo clowns being tossed and trampled and all that. But the object is to avoid that and to protect the cowboys and to entertain the crowd, basically, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a given that you're going to be in a very bad situation most of the time because, you know, you've got an unpredictable animal. He's gonna do what he wants to do. He's going to do this. So you're going to be put in a position where you're going to get in there that you're probably going to get what they call hooked and thrown out of there. But the better that you prepare yourself to be able to make yourself in the right position to walk away from that, the longer your career will be.
So you're kind of like the ninjas of the West, is what you're telling me.
I never had it put that way, but yeah, cowabunga, dude, let's do it.
Okay, Cody.
So is it true about bulls that they don't like red, like don't like red capes? Is that true?
Great question. You know, and it really is a myth. It doesn't have to do with the red cape that the matadors, you see, if the matadors are fighting, or like in our case, we wear bandanas a lot of times on our deals. It's all about the movement. It's the movement of something that brings their attention to it. And that's why when you see the guys with the capes and the matadors, and they can stand in one spot, but the bull will follow the cape and follow that deal.
Is there anything else you'd like to say to the people of East County?
Boy golly, if they get a chance, come to the rodeo. They're going to enjoy it.
So, Cody, now that you've seen a little bit of what life as a rodeo clown is like, are you ready to reconsider your future?
No, because as much as my counselors say that I should quit any field that involves thinking, I think I should steer clear of this kind of career.
Are you saying that you don't want to get involved in something that can cow you this much?
You know, I have a lot of beef with you saying something that mean about me, Dad.
Well, I would say that right now my attitude is the lasso your problems.
I just don't know if I'm capable of learning the ropes on this exciting career.
Well, son, that sounds like a lot of bull to me because I don't know anyone who clowns around as much as you do. This is Mark Clements.
And this is Cody Clements.
Clocking out of one of the wildest jobs in East County.
A bill will soon be introduced in the California legislature that would grant low-income students at 5 Cal State University campuses a stipend of $500 a month for basic living expenses. The idea is to provide a universal basic income so more students can afford to stay in school. State Senator Dave Cortese says the pilot program would serve about 14,000 students, or about 11% of the campus population.
Because that's roughly the percentage of students who were essentially in abject poverty. They're either homeless or severely at risk of being homeless.
To qualify, the student would have to have a household income below $20,000. The program would cost the state an estimated $84 million a year. Opponents of universal basic income criticize it as a government handout that could be squandered. However, Cortese says data from two such programs launched in Stockton and Santa Clara County do not support that concern. Many campuses in the state already provide housing referrals, food banks, and other resources to students in need, but they vary widely. Cortese says if the bill passes and the universal basic income program ends up working successfully to reduce poverty and dropout rates in the Cal State system, it could be expanded.
If it is effective, you'd want to be doing it on all campuses and probably extend it to community colleges as well.
The specific schools that would take part in the three-year pilot have not been announced. The legislative deadline to file bills is a week from Friday. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Ed Barena with East County Magazine on KNSJ with some grilling safety tips. Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna, East County Magazine's in-house fire chief and columnist, says that firefighters respond to many structure and wild land fires that involve barbecues. He adds, quote, "We also treat many victims for injuries related to barbecues. Barbecue safety means sending the right smoke signal, and that signal is safety," unquote. While gas grills contribute to a higher number of home fires than their charcoal counterparts, all grills pose a risk for fires and burns. Grills should be placed well away from the home and decks, far from under the eaves or overhanging branches and vegetation. Other grilling safety tips from the National Fire Protection Association are as follows. 1. Propane and charcoal grills should only be used outdoors. 2. Keep children and pets at least 3 feet away from the grilling area. 3. Keep your grill clean by removing grease or fat buildup from the grills and in trays below the grill. 4. Never leave your grill unattended. Always make sure your gas grill lid is open before igniting it. 5. If you smell gas while cooking, immediately get away from the grill and call the fire department. Do not move the grill. If the flame goes out, turn the grill and gas off and wait at least 15 minutes before relighting it. 6. When using a starter fluid, use only charcoal starter fluid. Never add any other flammable liquids to the fire. Keep charcoal fluid out of the reach of children and away from heat sources. When you are finished grilling, let the coals completely cool before disposing of them in a metal container. And finally, use common sense and grill safely.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region. Please support KNSJ by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.